positive person, and that also helped to inform me. And from that time until this, I have connected with the group of Canadians, Arabs, and Jews for Just Peace, and have learned that there are many, many ways that we can be involved right here where we are, and hope to make a difference for justice. I could mention that there will be a list being circulated this evening for those of you that would like to be more involved. We invite you to sign your name and give your contact information, and Jackie will be starting that list around shortly. Our event tonight is also a part of the Dalhousie Israeli Apartheid Week, and I invite you before you leave to have a look at the displays here. There's an excellent poster behind the tall poster and has an awful lot of information on it, and you might want to have a closer look. The last event of this week's activities, stretched over 2 weeks actually, is an artist night, and it will take place at the Company House, which is on Gottingen Street, near the corner of Kennard and Gottingen. And there will be lots of live performances tomorrow night. There'll be a performance of a play called Seven Jewish Children, and spoken word performances by L. Jones and others, and musical performances by Nicola, and some short films by John Grayson and Dave Ron. And the entrance will be by donation, and the money collected will go for medical assistance to medical aid for Palestine. And now I would like to welcome and introduce our guest speaker this evening, John Elmer. He'll be speaking this evening about Canadian foreign policy and the creation of Ghetto Palestine. John Elmer is a Canadian journalist that has lived and reported from the West Bank and Gaza since 2003. And he's currently based and living in Bethlehem. He's a regular contributor to Al Jazeera English and the IPS News Agency. His work has been appearing in Le Monde Diplomatique, the Journal of Palestine Studies, and The Progressive, among others. His work focuses on liberation movements as well as military and foreign policy, with a particular focus on Canada. And he regularly lectures throughout the US and Canada, and we are very, very fortunate to have him here with us this evening. Thank you very much.
Hi guys, thanks a lot for having me. It's really nice to be back. I'm a Dalhousie alumni, and actually, if you were to divide my life into sections, there's a Halifax section when I worked with the Gazette and did a political science degree here, and then there's a Palestine section. I left from Dalhousie to go and live in Jenin during the Intifada in 2002-2003, and since then, without really anticipating it being a lifelong project, sort of one step after another, here I am, gray-haired, a decade later, and I've been living there ever since. I've lived in Gaza for a number of years, Jenin for a number of years, and I'm currently based in Bethlehem. Part of the reason that, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I'm living in Bethlehem, not in Gaza at the moment. But one of them relates to the work that I want to talk about tonight, because Bethlehem is one of the model cities in this new project to create, you know, what's tabbed as Ghetto Palestine in the title, which sounds maybe like a provocative title, but I think hopefully by the end of, say, the next hour or so, it'll be clear that that is actually a standard description of what's happening in the West Bank. And it's important to place Canada at the heart of it. And I think for me, how I ended up growing up in Toronto and going to university at Dalhousie and then spending the rest of my life immersed in the most politically toxic conflict on the planet with no previous connection to that conflict. I didn't know my closest friends were Jewish until I went to Palestine, and growing up in the East End of Toronto, I didn't have very many Palestinian friends. So coming to this topic and its heated nature was definitely an experience for me, and actually Dr. Zaid here in the audience was one of the first people when I wrote an essay for the Dalhousie Gazette and set off a firestorm of Zionist reaction, which I was unprepared for, having no experience in the conflict before, and got a really great supportive letter from Dr. Zaid, and 12 years later, still a good friend, and thanks very much for your work in bringing me here, and everybody else that does the work behind the scenes. Us speakers, whether people know it or not, we just show up here and everything is done behind the scenes by the people doing the real important work in the small groups that happen all the time. So thanks again for having me. The events of the last 2 months are something that I hope we can get to in the question and answer period. I mean, it's I really think in the last couple months we've lived an entire generation of news in the region that I live and work in, and in attempting to prepare this talk, I went 10 or 12 different directions with things that I wanted to say in big piles of paper, talking about what is really, I think we will see in the future, is a world historical moment going on right now in the Middle East. The reason that brought me to the Middle East in the first place was our link here in Canada, North America, to the imperial project that's going on in the Middle East. And I think when I try to introduce why it is that I come to this conflict, or how it is that I ended up working in the Middle East, I try to sort of to generalize it by saying that I think if I was 15 or 20 years older, I probably would have been working in Nicaragua, Guatemala, and if I was 25, 30 years older, I probably would have been in Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam. And I think, you know, at the turn of the 21st century, the Middle East, for a number of reasons, oil being, I think, chief among them, is the sharp end of the imperial project at this point in history. And like I said, I think if I had come to this work in the 80s, I probably would have been compelled to work in the national liberation struggles that were going on in Latin America. So I come to this conflict as a political activist in Canada, and the Canadian angle, North American angle, our role in this conflict is what I try to keep the focus on. And so sometimes there's a tendency with these conflicts far away to treat them as if it's something separate from our body politic or separate from our political project here. And I think that that's a serious mistake that we make in political strategy, to make these conflicts seem as though they're disparate and in many cases unconnected. And I think that what I'm going to try to do today is put Canada at the heart of, without embellishing or using hyperbole, to actually put Canada at the heart of the project that's going on in the Middle East right now, which is to create a ghetto Palestine. But it's also an integral part of Canadian foreign policy that's happening right now. So I want to try to, at the same time, while telling you about what's going on in Palestine, to understand that from a Canadian perspective, it's part of a larger project. And if we can see these interventions as united, as part of a unified policy, it makes it more potent both politically when analyzing it, but also makes us stronger in confronting these situations where, a week ago, a war resolution was brought on Libya. Libya hasn't been mentioned in Canada in 25 years, and within 36 hours, in a two-hour UN Security Council meeting, we have a war resolution on Libya without any parliamentary debate, without any discussion even in our newspapers. We haven't had a Canadian correspondent even visit Libya in, you know, in an entire generation. And now we have, as we speak, Canadian warplanes dropping bombs, you know, Canadian frigates integrated into American aircraft carrier battle groups, which are the command platform for the bombing raids that take place all throughout the wider area that the United States characterizes as Central Command, but roughly the area that runs from North Africa through the Middle East into Central Asia, Pakistan. And if you look at the global interventionist paradigm in the 21st century, the vast majority of the material, the resources, and the political initiative is engaged in that region. You know, running from Morocco to Pakistan is the you know, the overwhelming majority of Canadian and United States political, military, diplomatic, economic intervention. And so when we're putting this in the case of Palestine, I think that this narrative also really brings out the significance of something like Libya. Because for Canada, the project that Canada is undertaking in Palestine to create a Palestinian security force that backs an unelected government, that acts in the interests of Canadian allies in the region, is again not separate from any other political project that Canada has taken place. We know that Canada was in the presidential palace in Port-au-Prince for the overthrow of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And speaking of world historical moments, the return of Aristide to Haiti was an unbelievable moment that was swallowed by the incredible volume of news happening all over the world right now. But if anyone saw footage, and if you didn't see footage of Aristide's return to Haiti, I have an anti-state disposition and I'm not a big fan of politicians, but if you see the way that the body politic in Haiti responded to the return of Aristide, which happened without any foreign intervention, without any coordination with the powers that be, I think you see a leader that is truly beloved by a significant percentage of the population of that country, which is at the moment undergoing a rigged election with an unaccountable government, which Canada is training the security forces, the prison guards for this regime. They're doing that in Palestine. Of course, the chief pillar of Canada's intervention in Afghanistan is training security forces, of course, and although the Canadian war effort was supposed to end at the end of this year, we're going to find out, and if people want to talk about it in the question and answer period, I think that we're just entering a new phase of Canadian intervention in Afghanistan, and that's going to go on for many years to come, and is needs to be seen, each of these conflicts needs to be seen as part of the same whole, not so we don't treat each conflict like it's some kind of brand new situation, to understand that the training of security forces and the diplomatic and government level intervention in these states, whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, Haiti, Palestine, and now Libya, and soon somewhere else, they match the same program that's been going on in Canada for a number of years. And it's a program that is characterized, the Liberals called it a 3D program, diplomacy, development, and defense. The Conservatives renamed it the whole of government. The same terms, different terms for the same program. And on a military level, the analog is the three-block war. The idea is that you integrate all aspects of the foreign policy apparatus and deal with war fighting on a comprehensive level, which I think as political activists engaged in Canada, this is actually a far more significant development than it's given credit for, because essentially what it is the new paradigm is accepting that conflict is fundamentally political, and that these political conflicts have to be dealt with not on a military plane, but on a political plane. And of course, as famous writers throughout history have said, war is just politics by another means. It's part of the toolbox of foreign intervention. Sometimes it's active warfare, sometimes it's capital investment, sometimes it's development, development aid, which is the vast majority of it is security aid. For example, the project that I unfold to you tonight here in Palestine is a CETA project. It's a CETA-funded aid project. Almost all of the CETA dollars